Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, you're listening to Toby Mathis here with Jeff Webb. You can say hi, Jeff.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
And special guest, Troy Butler.
I feel very special. Thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah, I see you, Sherry. And I know that I was late. We are playing with Aloha, too. Hey, thanks, Jeff. Today, we're going to really focus in on bookkeeping. So today, we have our head of our bookkeeping here, Troy.
Very happy to be here.
You're very ecstatic. Hello from Alaska to Egg Jerry. There's my buddy from Alaska. We have a whole bunch of people, so we're just going to jump in. All right, so we will answer your questions as they come in. If you have questions that we can't get to, because this is going to be, again, we have about, I think, well over 20 questions to answer in a short period of time to do it, then just send them on in to Tax Tuesday, Anderson Advisors. If you need a detailed response or something specific to your needs, where you need a written response, you got to be Platinum or Tax Client. Hey, this is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. Speaking of giving back, we do have a little bit of an issue in this country right now. We want to raise awareness this year. We're going to make a dedicated effort to see if we can't change some of these numbers. But we have a real issue with suicide amongst our veterans. I'm just throwing you some of the numbers, and there's a veterans crisis line there to help people actually get help. A lot of these folks in our armed services do not seek help. We want to make sure that we do what we can. And I work with an organization, One Veteran Foundation. I care about them because they actually do something that that works. All right. So the One Veteran Foundation, great guy, Dave Rafis, that I've worked with. And what they do is they train service animals to work with veterans. So the reason that we want to cull that number is 28 days is far too much. So you can go to One Veteran Foundation, great group. Feel free to go visit them. If you want to hear about what they do, I've done a podcast with Dave and he in his group and does a fantastic job. And I'm just going to tell you guys, you can go to our podcast page, Anderson Advisors Podcast, and you could find it. I think it's page 3. But they are able to train service dogs now at about $2,500 per dog, hard cost, because they have so many people that donate. And if you don't know how much it costs, it's about $50,000 a dog. You're going to this in the private market. So these guys do a really great job. So I just can't recommend them enough. But if you want to go, please visit them. But if nothing else, become aware and at least thank our veterans, because God knows they went through hell for us, a lot of them. And they carry those scars. On to bookkeeping. Let's go through a little history. How bookkeeping began. And you can go way back to we'll just go medieval time, because it's been around for a long time. Let's say I had a sword, but I wanted to eat, and I didn't want to eat what I was killing with my sword. I might trade my sword for a chicken or a bunch of chickens. So maybe I'm trading my sword for a bunch of chickens. Whatever you do, don't give your chicken a sword. That's just bad. But maybe I'm trading my sword for chickens, and then I would keep track of it in a detailed record. And I would say, hey, I bought 5 chickens with 1 sword. I sold 1 sword and 5 chickens. The only problem is that we started dealing with currency. So now we had to track all this stuff with dollars. And so here's how it ends up working. It's country bookkeeping. Thank you, whoever came up with that. You're evil, and you've made a lot of people's lives worse. No, I'm just kidding. And so they would say, hey, Tuesday on the 21st of January, I bought 5 chickens. I'm debiting my inventory by the value of those chickens of $10. I bought the 5 chickens for cash, so I have to credit my cash, but I sold a sword in essence to buy the chickens, so I have to debit my cash by $10, and I have to credit my inventory. The accountants are all giddy at this point, because they're just excited that everybody gets to see exactly what they do. Somebody's saying, yes, they were in existence with the Romans. I think the Romans had swords. They had to trade for chickens too, right? No, it's been around forever. And I always point that out. And the reason I point that out is because everybody thinks that you have to have QuickBooks. It used to be you would actually just note this stuff down. Maybe you had an abacus. Maybe you had a little ledger. If you were in the mob, you had 2. Get it?
Yeah.
Right, all right.
Right.
That was funny.
Yep.
All right. Here's the questions we're going to get into tonight, because it's all bookkeeping. And Troy, thanks again for being here, because This is all he does all day, right?
That's what I do.
And you love it?
Love it. My favorite thing.
You can't tell. He sounds really excited. But when accountants get excited, they usually don't show it. All right. So questions that we're going to ask. All right. Should I hire a bookkeeper for my business or do it myself? These are the questions we're going to answer tonight. We have several companies. What is the best way to pay and track expenses for each one? What's the best way to set reminders of accounting things I should be doing? I'm pretty new at bookkeeping for our business. How do you keep track of your reimbursable expenses before your corporation makes a profit? I have a business degree, so I'm starting my first real estate business. I would like to know what the current best practices are with software, QuickBooks versus spreadsheets versus other, and what are some tips to get good bookkeeping results with the least amount of effort? We're going to answer all those. Plus, I'm starting an Airbnb business and an e-commerce store because you must be bored and you said I'm going to do two things at once, right? What bookkeeping do I use to integrate with Airbnb? And the same question for the Shopify API. We'll answer that. What is the official name when we transfer money from a company, a C Corp or LLC, to our holding company? How do we handle these transfers in our bookkeeping? When we take money out of the holding company to use for personal expenses, how do we handle that for bookkeeping? Is it legal to put personal funds directly into our company? And how do we document that for bookkeeping? You guys have some good questions. There was a lot of questions, by the way. You guys did a really great job. What is the proper way to account for expenditures made to improve a warehouse building? Should expenses above a certain amount be capitalized versus expense? Does it depend on the nature of the expense, like HVAC, flooring, lighting, etc.? Here's somebody. This is a really good question, by the way, but you said something in this question that freaked me out, which I'll point to. I'm trying very hard to build a stock and stock option business to retire. I would love to learn and master the bookkeeping accounting because I'm having a hard time finding the right answers for creating a trade log type spreadsheet where I can keep track of buy, sell, crediting, premium received, debiting of expenses, broker regulatory commission taking out of my account by brokerage, and knowing a balance of what's available if I leverage account as collateral, i.e. selling naked puts. Stop that. I watch so many people blow themselves up with naked puts. It's fast money, but 25% held back kind of a guarantee. How are the taxes calculated? All that. If you guys don't know what a naked put is, it's really exciting. What are the best accounts in the chart of accounts you recommend to set up in QuickBooks to make the end of year filing easiest to transfer expenses to an IRS form? So I'm sure they're just asking like what categories. Mm-hmm. I am currently a wholesaler and not sure how to input my income into QuickBooks. I feel like I set it up incorrectly. I don't know if that's a question, but
we'll help them.
Yeah, we'll still help them. Okay, disregarded LLC write-off rental car charges incurred while conducting business for the LLC. And we're going to keep jumping in. How does a business owner reduce the bookkeeper's hourly rate of time on your books and improve on reporting? How do you reduce the book hourly rate of time? That's just mean. No, I think what they're saying is how do we reduce the amount of time it takes for them to do your books?
Right.
How does a business owner ensure documentation of receipts? How does a business owner ensure the bookkeeper's understanding of the big picture of the company? How does the bookkeeper, tax preparer, and CPA work together to help reduce taxes for the business owner? Does a business owner need to work with their business accounting person on a monthly basis? We are getting close to the end of the questions. Like I told you guys, we had a lot. I have a ranching business organized as an S-Corp and just bought a new truck in the name of the business. I use it primarily for personal use. Similarly, we are currently building a garage shop that can be used partially for business storage use and partially for personal use. Does paying for your items, which have mixed use with your business account, jeopardize your corporate veil? How should these transactions be reflected in QuickBooks? Can you explain what practices for bookkeeping and accounting are suggested when setting up an S or C Corp for long-term real estate, hold on land, or future development of small hotels? We'll get into all that fun stuff. And then last but not least, we have two more. Yeah. Does a holding LLC require books also? And C Corp was incorporated in mid-2019. Can management fees be charged retroactive to January? I'm assuming it's January 2019 to an entity that the C Corp is managing. Can we go back a couple of years to capture expenses? So we will go over all of that fun stuff. You guys, trade futures. What is a naked put? Jennifer, a naked put is when you sell the right for someone to force you to buy something that you don't own.
Correct.
And it's free money so long as the item doesn't become worth less than the amount that they can force you to pay. The problem is every now and again it does, and you don't own it. So then you have to go out and buy it. And so if a stock tanks, that's a good way to lose everything you own. A great example would be, let's see, what was a good one that just killed people? Emulex. Emulex was at like $125. This would have been almost 20 years ago. And you could sell naked puts at $35 and still make a pretty good premium because somebody knew that it was going to tank. And so people were selling lots and lots of, and somebody's doing this. It's a naked. No, it's not a naked. Guys are horrible. I'm getting the worst comment as they're distracting me. Long short is that I could say, hey, Jeff, give me a buck. And you could make me buy that $35 for the next, anytime in the next year or whatever period of time we negotiate. I get the dollar no matter what. And I think this is great because Emulex is at 135 or 125, whatever it is. What if it goes down to $20? Now I have to go buy Emulex and sell it to Jeff. I have to buy it for $20. I'm selling it to Jeff for $35. I'm buying it from Jeff at $35. So I'm actually like, I'm going to be way underwater on this one. Like this is stink. Pay $35 for however many contracts I give. And it's just a really bad situation. So anyway, I'll make sure that we cover that. All right. Here's a question. And Troy, since you're the man of the hour, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. Should I hire a bookkeeper for my business or do it myself?
It depends. Should I do good?
Yeah. You sound like a lawyer.
So it depends on the level of transactions you guys have. If you have 2 transactions a month, I maybe wouldn't worry about getting a bookkeeper to handle your books. I would handle it myself. If you start getting 100 transactions a month, that's when I would recommend you hire a bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. What's the legal requirements for bookkeeping? What do all businesses have to do?
All businesses have to have books and records. So
they all have to have books and records.
To have file their tax return. But the IRS really doesn't define what those books and records are. So it could be spreadsheets. It could be QuickBooks.
It could be a ledger, guys. It could be cocktail napkins that have your number on them. So a lot of people immediately start thinking, oh, my God, I have to have all these beautiful Peachtree QuickBooks. I have to buy all these programs. I'm with Troy. If it's a few transactions, document it somewhere. Spreadsheet's just fine. If you need a P&L, profit and loss, or balance sheet, then you could pay someone to put it in their QuickBooks or whatever it is and create a P&L or a balance sheet for you if needed. But if you're doing a small business that has very few transactions, you're probably not going to need that level of detail. It's just tracking it.
Yeah, the do-it-myself part, you've really got to look at 2 things, is your confidence in the bookkeeping, your ability to do the bookkeeping. And the other part is I've sometimes seen where people doing business are doing so much on the administrative that they're actually interfering with the actual work that they're trying to do.
That's it. You didn't go to school to become a bookkeeper, right? So if you're doing whatever you may be doing, maybe you're running a restaurant, guess what you're not getting paid to do? Your books. And so you got to figure out what's the best value of your time and whether you want to have somebody else do it. And then what's the fastest way from A to B? So many people create separate sets of books for each side of their business, and they make huge chart of accounts. These big, huge Christmas tree looking things is better. Unless you need that level of granularity and like it's serving you a purpose, you don't need to go to charts of accounts and they're doing $200,000 a year. I'm like, what the heck's wrong? Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I'd rather not be doing that. Hey guys, I'm going to answer a couple questions that came in right at the very beginning. The first one was, if I have a 501c3 and a C corp, do I have to file a 1099? If you're being paid, no, like if somebody does not have to give you a 1099 if you're a corporation. But if you are paying somebody for services over $600, you got to give them a 1099, and it has to be done. It's due at the end of January, right?
Correct.
At the end of January. Somebody says, when I get donation on profit of more than $500, what form do I need to fill out with the IRS? If it's cash and it's over $500, it's what, 8383, something like that? Or what?
If it's cash, it's just Schedule A.
Schedule A.
You don't have to do 8283 is only for non-cash companies.
Non-cash. Like if somebody gives you a bunch of clothes or something, and plus you're supposed to be giving them a receipt. And with the value of it. So
yeah, from the charity point of view, you almost never have to do any kind of form. The one exception is like card donations. There's a form for that.
And somebody says, by the way, if you go over $5,000, like you're giving an item that has a value more than $5,000, you're either getting appraisal or it has to have a readily attainable market value like stock. easy to find out. If you're given real estate, you're going to want an appraisal unless you just bought it within a year, which case you use its basis. All right. Somebody says, just interest reported on a 1099 get offset for taxes if there's a K-1 with negative, that's negative from depreciation. And I could say, and it sounds like they have a K-1 that has a from real estate that's a passive loss. And the question is, can they offset?
Yeah, they would be able to do that, assuming that it's ordinary income or something like that. Those K-1s typically have about 20 different kinds of
income
or deductions on.
If you have passive real estate loss, though, you're going to be either looking at real estate active participation or real estate professional to offset, though, right?
Right.
Yeah, because interest is still, it's portfolio income, but it's not passive income per se.
Correct.
We purchased a house in April of 2019 and lived in it for 3 months. After moving out in July, the house was available to rent. We decided to undertake a major renovation without renting it out. Although all this is need to be added to the basis, can we do a cost segregation for 2019 to push the income down? The house will be back on the rental market in April. So sounds like they've made it available. They did a cost seg. It's a vacant house. My understanding is that you can do the cost seg, but you can't create a loss if it's a vacant house. Am I missing something?
No, that sounds about right. Yeah, there's always that issue that you're creating losses and you have no income from the property. Which
you're allowed to grab all the expenses. So like, here's the deal. Yes, you can add it to basis. Yes, you can cost seg it. The problem with a vacant house is that you can't create a loss. You can get yourself to, but you don't have any income coming in anyway. So all you do is you carry forward that loss into the next year. So you don't lose it. You're just going to use it in 2020 when you start making money. Or if you liquidate it, you'll get to release that loss and offset ordinary income. Isn't that exciting? You guys are asking really great questions. All right. What is the best way to use funds received from the sale of a business? I'm just going to tell you, you just give it to me. Those are the best use.
Right.
No, if you made money off the business, chances are it's capital gains. If you sold the business, if you sold the asset, and the income is the businesses. So there's no right or wrong way to how to use those funds. You got to figure out what type of funds they are, what type of gain it has, if it has a gain, if it has a loss.
Right.
And whether there's anything that you could use to offset it. So there's not, it's not magic. It's not magic dollars. You just have to figure out what is it for. So like, I could sell a business. I'm selling the shares of my company. That's long-term capital gains. If I held it over a year, if I held it for less than a year, short-term, but I could also just sell all the assets in my business, in which case it's income to the business. And now it really depends on what type of business that is. I love getting into the business stuff, though, by the way. When you're selling a business, there are ways to do it that's tax-free. All right. Well, there's a bunch of other questions, but we're going to keep jumping on. What is the best way to pay and track expenses for each of them? What say you, Troy?
So, again, it depends. If there's several companies that aren't related, they each need to have their own set of books. They need to be tracked separately, not combined into one giant set of books. However, if one of the entities or companies is disregarded to another one, we can combine those sets of books into one, but we got to make sure we're collecting by company or business activity.
You just said a magic word, and I think that, Jeff, you like this word. You like using classes.
Yep.
And when you use classes in like in a program like QuickBooks, it means you're not setting up a whole other set of books. You're literally creating a subset under a major setting. In rental real estate, this is your secret weapon, guys. A lot of accountants will set up separate set of books for each property, and they're tricking you into like, they're going to say, oh, this is how you have to do it, or this is best practices or whatnot. And they're going to charge you for each set. And you're going to have to get a license like QuickBooks Online for each set of books. Don't do that. Use classes and have your properties underneath it. Is that fair?
That's 100% fair. We just got to make sure that all those rental properties are going to the same tax return. That's the best way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's the best way to set reminders of accounting? Things I should be doing. I'm pretty new at bookkeeping in our business.
So what you don't want to do is you don't want to let it build up for an entire year and then have to do it all at once. Because it's really hard to remember what this expense from Home Depot from 6 months ago for $42 was for. Mm-hmm. You want to do it monthly. What I'd recommend is setting up, if you use a calendar, put it on your calendar to do it once a month, every 2 weeks, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I would say that, and Jeff, do you have anything you want to add on that?
No, one? I mean, on my own set of books, I do mine about every 2 weeks. I could easily get away with doing it monthly. But like Troy said, sometimes you see these expenses on your credit card statement or something, you have no idea. You may have lost the receipt. Hopefully you haven't, but better stay on top of these things as you go.
Absolutely. And just remember, $75 and it's a meal, you don't have to actually have a receipt. Just some backup on it. use credit cards if you have to, or debit card, just so you have a track of it. And then also most banks now will just load into a spreadsheet, and then just get used to using a spreadsheet. Everybody's going to tell you to use QuickBooks and all this stuff. Great if you need to have a P&L and a balance sheet. It doesn't blow you up if you don't. My recommendation for most people is track it on a spreadsheet and give that to a bookkeeper or an accountant, have them create your P&L, maybe quarterly, maybe twice a year, maybe once a year, whatever works for you, depending on how many transactions. If you have a transaction a month, that's not going to work. You need to do it more often. If you have 100 transactions a year, I'm probably doing that quarterly.
Yep. And the more complex your business gets, the more complex your accounting needs to be.
Right.
And this is a little off, but how often would you suggest they either back up their QuickBooks or make backup copies of their spreadsheets? Or do you do that monthly?
I would do that every time you use it, honestly.
Every time you use it.
Yep.
Have it automatically. And more stuff you can do that's automatic, the better. So if you have expenses that are on a monthly basis, put them on auto pay. On auto pay and just, you know, set it and forget it. I shouldn't say forget it, but just make it to where you can't forget it. So a lot of people are like, hey, what kind of thing should I be doing? And then use a calendar. Google Calendar is free, and just set yourself reminders on doing stuff. Hey, did I pay this? Or, you know, don't forget, reimburse myself expenses and run a payroll once in a while if you're an S-Corp or something like that. Hey, a few questions. One is the difference between a P&L and a balance sheet. Do either one of you guys want to take that one?
Sure, I'll take it. A balance sheet lists your assets, liabilities, and equity for the company. So your cash is an asset, buildings is an asset. Liabilities would be something like credit cards or a mortgage. Equity is how much money you put into the business, essentially, or your retained earnings, the lifetime earnings of the company. A profit and loss shows your profitability for the whatever period we're looking at. So a year, you can do profit and loss by year, month, quarter, week, day. Usually when we're looking at tax returns, we're looking at it on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm. Balance sheet is in my bank account and what I owe other people.
It's like the balance sheet is like a snapshot and at any one point in time.
Yeah, it's that point in time. So I could have a balance sheet that shows I have $1 million sitting in it, but I owe $300,000 in credit card bill. So that tells me my equity. I just subtract that one off the other. Well, my P&L may be showing that I'm just having a really horrible year. Well, they don't really relate to each other. Like, in order to get the cash, I'm either getting contributions, loans, or I'm making money. But, you know, that's still on my balance sheet. Mm-hmm.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. 2 in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
A few things that people asked, and I'm just going to knock these out. Somebody asked about Airbnb. All right. Tax implications of being the owner of a short-term rental business like Airbnb. All right. So if you have an average daily rental of 7 days or less, it's an active business. You're going to be charged self-employment tax. You are a hotel for all extent purposes. You still get depreciation. It doesn't blow you out of the water for that, but you are an active participant. If you want to keep that passive and make that income passive, what you do is you put the real estate in an LLC and you lease it to the host. That would be a corporation, C Corp 9 times out of 10, or an LLC investors. And you would do the short-term business through the corporation. So it's what's listing it on Airbnb. It's a host. You're renting long. So I'm renting on a monthly basis to my corporation. So the income that the corporation pays me is passive. It's going to be rental income that I take the depreciation against. The corporation, on the other hand, now is going to be receiving that money, and that income is going to be on the corporation, where it's possible to be offset through other expenses, or it could sit on it. And if it's a C Corp, it's 21%. If it's an S Corp, after a small salary, then at least I'm not subject to the self-employment tax. Somebody says, receive permission to establish a corporate relationship. Be aware right now that that would probably be tested just because of 199A, right? They have to show an actual reason as to why you're changing that relationship on the 20% deduction.
Right. Are we talking like a C Corp to an S Corp? Or
yes, he's asking which would be better. And so generally speaking, if you need the money, you're going to be an S corp. He just said, basically, it's $241,000 a year. I can tell you already, somebody said, I found this. I have an independent contractor overseas. Do we still need to send them a 1099?
If they're doing all of their work overseas, they are not doing any work within the United States, and they are not U.S. citizens, then you do not have to issue a 1099 to them.
Yep. No 1099, non-U.S. citizen. Yeah, somebody just said the same thing. They asked that same question. So there's two of them. So if it's foreign and they're all, and all the business being done overseas, you don't have to. I'm managing someone else's funds and then dispersing to the owner. Do I need to send them a 1099? So you're acting as a property manager.
Yeah, typically you do. You're going to issue a 1099 for the amount of rent that you collected on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. If I'm in an audit for a specific year and they want my QuickBooks for this year, can I restrict them to only see the year in question? Yeah, that's, you're only giving them the information that they're requesting. They can open most audits to 3 years, though.
Yeah, I would provide them with reports. I would not provide them with your QuickBook.
Yeah, in fact, that's actually a really good one. What else? What is cost basis? That's how much you paid for something, plus any improvements or things that adjust the cost basis. Is there anything else?
Depreciation reduces your cost basis.
Depreciation, yeah. Anything else on it that you can think of?
No.
Cost basis. Like in stock, it's what you paid for plus the commission that you paid. Sometimes you're going to add things to basis when you're dealing with options. Somebody asked about futures and what's the best way to hold that. You can't write off expenses as an individual when you're in investment unless your activities rise to the level of this thing called traders, which I would never suggest you try to do. I would always say operate through a traditional business or use a partnership with a corporation as the general product. Attorney's fees awarded from a foreclosure proceed. That's a weird one because attorney's fees you cannot deduct. But if you're an investor, then you would deduct them against the income that you receive.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I'm not sure that all the circuits agree on this. Some circuits will allow you that if it's netted before you get your money, the attorney fees have already been pulled out, then you only have to report those proceeds. But yeah, typically most of the circuits, I believe, we'll want you to report all the proceeds regardless of how much was paid to the attorneys.
Mm. All right. Let's see. All right. How do you keep track of your reimbursable expenses before your corporation makes a profit?
So even though you may not be profitable, you still need to track your expenses and your income. Again, you could do that in a spreadsheet, but we need to make sure that we're providing something to the corporation that shows what those expenses were and what they were for.
Mm-hmm. And just know that when you are when your corporation is even before it's operating, you can still go back in and grab things as a startup expense.
Right.
That's going to be something that we also hit up here. What you end up doing is when you have a corporation, the investigation period before it's alive, and you times as you're investigating the line of business to get into and you're incurring these expenses, the IRS follows the rule which Congress laid down, which is I can write up to $5,000 in year one, amortize the rest over 15 years. If I spent too much over 50 grand,
right,
then I'm going to be amortizing the whole kit and caboodle over 15 years. So like you're going to get to write it off. You may have to spread it out. Let's keep jumping on. I have a business degree from decades ago and started my first real estate business. I would like to know what the current best practices are with software, QuickBooks versus spreadsheets versus other, and what are some tips to get good bookkeeping results with the least effort?
Okay, so it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. It doesn't have to be QuickBooks or Peachtree or whatever. It can just be a spreadsheet. You can use accounting paper if you wanted to. But QuickBooks is probably the most user-friendly of the options, I'd say.
QuickBooks? You like QuickBooks?
I love QuickBooks.
Yeah.
So if you come to us for your bookkeeping needs or if you go take your taxes to anyone, they're probably going to be using QuickBooks. So that's probably the most universal.
Somebody says that they use Zoho Books.
I'm not familiar with Zoho, but
I've never heard of it either.
Yeah, there's thousands of accounting softwares out there. So QuickBooks is the most prevalent. And then tips to get good bookkeeping results with the least amount of effort. What you can do with most accounting softwares, QuickBooks included, is you can tie in your bank accounts and credit cards to have them automatically get recorded.
You'll pull it right on in.
Right.
You know what? I think it comes back to the very earlier side that QuickBooks is universally accepted as probably the cookbook, maybe NetSuite for bigger companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you are not a huge company, and what would you say is not a huge company, less than $1 million?
Yeah.
Then you may want to just try to use spreadsheets. And somebody just said, what about the categories?
That's called your chart of accounts. And the more narrow you can keep your chart of accounts, and the more succinct, like, it doesn't mean like you have three, but it means you don't have to have pages and pages of chart of accounts. I've seen people do that on small businesses, and they're literally like, they're misclassifying stuff all the time because one month they're doing it one way and another month they're doing another, and they're just all over the place.
Yep.
You want to, like, what's a typical chart of account? How many categories?
Probably 35, I'd say.
Yeah, tops.
Yeah.
Tops, so that you know where to put things. I don't like keeping my data on the QuickBooks cloud where my data is hackable nowadays. What version of QuickBooks do you guys like?
We like QuickBooks Online. It makes it so you can see what we're working on at any time. You don't have to request access or copy from us. Plus, we can get you a discount on the QuickBooks Online through Anderson.
Yep. So the version of QuickBooks, most people are using QuickBooks Online. If you don't like to, you can use a hard copy or
desktop.
Yeah. The problem with the desktop version is when you give an accountant's copy, like if somebody's making changes, it locks your QuickBooks because you don't want to be making changes right after you just gave your accountant. The online's a little bit easier. And I understand what somebody's saying about security, but your email is going to get hacked before your QuickBooks is going to get hacked. Doesn't mean that, like, everybody gets hacked. I went to a symposium. Pretty much everybody, like every huge server farm has been hacked. It's just whether they've had to tell you is all,
right?
You know, so just about every, assume that you've been hacked and leave it at that. Let's see. What about QuickBox to share QuickBee Pro Desktop?
Okay. So I think what they're saying there, I could be wrong, is that they have services where you can store a QuickBooks desktop on a cloud, and that lets us log in.
Yep.
And they can also log in. So that works. It's just a couple extra steps. QuickBooks Online or QBO is usually just more convenient, and it has most of the same functionality as QuickBooks Desktop.
And I'm still a believer in spreadsheets, guys. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you, like, QuickBooks takes a while to learn.
Yeah.
Bookkeepers love it, but they also use it every day. I used to go into QuickBooks on a daily basis. Many years I did that, and I realized how much flipping time I was spending. I would rather just see the summary of my data in a Google Doc.
And just so we're clear, I would rather have a good spreadsheet than a messed up QuickBooks any day of the week.
Yep.
So if you're comfortable doing a spreadsheet, do a spreadsheet.
Yep. And every time I see a big mess, it was usually an error because of the software.
Right.
Like they didn't user error with the software. All right. I'm starting an Airbnb business and an e-commerce store. What bookkeeping do I use to integrate with Airbnb? And the same question for Spotify.
Okay, so Airbnb, they should be sending you monthly statements that show your monthly income and any Airbnb expenses you may have, management fees, that kind of stuff that Airbnb charges to use their platform. But as far as I know, they don't directly integrate with QuickBooks.
Mm-hmm.
Shopify, on the other hand, does directly integrate with QuickBooks. So it will automatically pull your income and expenses and automatically put that on there. Also, got to be sure that with the Airbnb stuff that you're recording all your expenses, not just the ones that are coming from Airbnb.
Like everything that's associated with this.
Right.
So it depends. If I'm Airbnb-ing and I'm doing it 2 weeks at a pop and it's a passive rental, and I'm not doing, like, I think there's criteria for, like, are you providing more services than would be typically to a renter, like cleaning and stuff like that.
Yeah, laundry, cleaning.
If you're just, hey, you're coming in, people are grabbing it for a month and it's completely passive, then that's different than the Airbnb business where it's almost like a hotel.
So typically 7 days or less.
7 days or less is you are a hotel, individual booking. So I would say how many guests, primary guests did I have? So if I had 90 days of rents and I had 10 guests, I had 9 days, that's passive. If I had 90 days and I had 20 renters, then I had 4.5 and I'm a hotel, and that's active income. And just different animals. Speaking of different animals, if you need bookkeeping, I'm just going to show you guys a link real quick, that ava.link.bk. If you want to look at bookkeeping, we do offer a virtual bookkeeping service. This is brand new. For those of you guys who have been around us for a lot of years, you know how we kind of operate. We do the same things you guys are doing. And so we're constantly trying to find things that would be a better service to our clients. The virtual bookkeeping service is real simple. It's a set of books. You're using spreadsheets.
Yes.
That we set up. We set up the chart of accounts. And we say, here's what you put in. You put in, if there's areas that you need to reclassify, you flag them as an Ask My Account. And then we go through them on a quarterly basis. And we take that, put it in QuickBooks, give you a balance sheet on a basis. The cost is $14.95 for the first set of books. If you are not a Platinum member, if you are an Anderson Advisors Platinum, which you all should be, it's $9.95. And I'm going to give you a little coupon code to take another $200 off of that. You go here and you're going to fill this little bugger out online. Price break number one is you get $9.95. Price break number two is $200 off. Susan will undoubtedly send you the coupon code. I have it somewhere. I have to go find it. Little things that you could say, real estate bookkeepers you can trust. We've been doing this a long time. There's the Forbes and all that good stuff that we're a member of the Forbes Council. And again, I'll make sure that we get that, that we get out there. You see my little, I think I put it up there, but I will make certain that I get it. How do we get the discount on QuickBooks? If you go through us, Troy, what do they have to do to get the discount QuickBooks?
So you just need to have a bookkeeping consult, and you should be able to tell anyone here at Anderson, hey, I need a bookkeeping consult, and we'll get you pointed in the right direction.
And what do they get? What do they get for the discount?
So it's usually like $20 off a month for the, it depends on the levels. There's a lot of different levels of QuickBooks. So that's why we have to have a consult to determine what you need. But yeah, you get a little discount from us.
Yep. All right. So your discount code, how much is the discount? It's like $15. What is it?
Yeah, it depends on the level. So I don't want to tell them an amount, you know.
No, you're just being such an accountant.
Yes.
All right. Here, I'm going to write the discount code for you guys. Susan sent it, but it is book tax. And it's going to save you $200 off. Now, here's how it works. If you become a bookkeeping, yeah, we could do the books for a nonprofit as well. In fact, we love it. Works at $3,500. You could do that. I'll show you where to put it. It's in that little coupon code. You just zip it right on down here. I thought I had it written in. And you put your little book tax right there. The other good thing about this is if you have multiple businesses, they're $500 thereafter. So we're just trying to get you to have a set amount of expense. You don't have to worry about hourlies and a bunch of other fun stuff. This is just, we work with you. We work with you to make sure that you are able to have a good set of books and you're not paying a gajillion dollars to do it. And yeah, you can do it for real estate too, as we're asking. Yeah, what it does is it saves you from having to get QuickBooks. So just QuickBooks Online is $50 a month. Mm-hmm. You get two sets, that's $100. That's $1,200. Basically, for the cost of QuickBooks Online, we can do your books for the entire year. That's what we try to do.
Right. And I don't know if Toby mentioned this, but we will be doing quarterly calls mm-hmm. with everyone to make sure that we're capturing all the expenses we can. Everything gets recorded correctly.
Yep. We want to make sure that you are getting the best. So I have one disregard. LLC is a disregard entity and several rentals under that. Is that? Yes. It's just $9.95. It's not $9.95 for each rental. We would have one set of books. Right. We're going to show you how to make classes. So it is one. Yes, it is ridiculously inexpensive. And that's the way we operate. All right, let's keep going to questions. I know you guys are showing that. Is this better than QuickBooks Online?
It's different.
Different. And it's cheaper. And it's going to be easier for you. That's what I ended up like. Again, I use me as the example, and I have dug deep into QuickBooks, and I love the reporting capabilities. But I can do as long as I have the end data, I can do whatever reporting capabilities I need. I usually build my own spreadsheets, and I spend way more time in spreadsheets than I do in QuickBooks. And so my guess, I don't think I'm alone. I think that for the most part, everybody's kind of the same way. It's, get the information into QuickBooks, but let somebody who does it day in and day out do it. I don't need to be spending all my time doing it, nor do I want to spend all my time doing it, nor do I want to spend $200 a month constantly having somebody input a few categories, which is like even Intuit, their base price is not just the cost of the software, but $200. So now I'm already $250 out of pocket, and I haven't even entered a transaction yet. So I'm just trying to make this easy for you guys. And we work with anybody. So we'll make sure that everything works. And somebody says, how is this different? It's not. If you're already working with us, we're going to find out the best solution for you. If you're already working with us and there's already a set transaction fee, then, you know, and we're telling you, switch, it's going to be better. It's going to be more economical and better. But I like to make sure everybody has a good set of books, and you shouldn't have to feel like you can't afford it. So we made something that's perfect for the entry level. What is the official name when we transfer money from a company, C Corp or LLC, to our holding company? How do we handle these transfers on our bookkeeping?
So I'm assuming that this is like a loan from Corp to the holding company?
Usually you're transferring money to a holding company. You're either transferring the money that came in as rents into the holding company, or maybe the holding company is transferring money to the C Corp to pay, or the C corp owns the holding company.
Right.
And so realistically, you know, all of those categories are a little bit different.
Right. So a couple different ways. So if your corp is transferring money to the holding company for income, rental income minus its management fee minus its expenses, that would be rental income to the LLC. Okay. If it was a loan from corp, more than $10,000, that's that has to get recorded as a loan. It would be a due to, we usually classify them as due to / due from, and then the name of the corporation. Mm-hmm. That's how we usually do it.
Okay. Yep. Somebody, a couple of questions. When they said about the disregarded LLC, apparently I was breaking up. You only have to pay for the one set of books. So you could have 10 rentals underneath the one set of books, and it's just $9.95 with the discount, it'd be $7.95. You guys get a $200 discount just because you're on this call. So it's a thank you for hanging out with us. When we are transferring money, so let's just say I'm transferring money from the LLC to the C Corp as a management fee, then it's income into the C Corp, it's a management expense to the LLC. When I'm putting money from a holding entity or from a sub entity into the holding, I am literally doing that on a class. I am just recording it as income to that core entity, and it is automatically flowing under the parent. I'm not going to set up two sets of books for the holding company.
Correct.
I'm going to set up one set of books, and if it's income, if it's an expense, it's flowing under the expense. But at the end of the day, I am going to be keeping one main set of books. But remember, books, everybody thinks of it as like separate P&Ls and balance sheets. No, it's recording transactions. So can I tell what that sub LLC made? Yeah, absolutely. Am I able to drill down into those expenses if I need to? Absolutely. But it all flows onto one P&L in one balance sheet. Makes life a lot easier and a lot less expensive. Other fun questions. When we take money out of a holding company for personal expenses, how do we handle that in bookkeeping?
So that is a holding company, or that's the holding company is an LLC. That would just be a distribution, which you're allowed to take, right? So you would record that as a equity item, members draw, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Makes life easy.
Yep.
Yeah, it's easy. So whenever you take a money out, and it's like, again, whenever I take money out of a holding company and it's my holding company, that's a safe. All I'm doing is saying, did I take money out of the safe or I put money in? That's it. Yep. It's not actually something that implodes. I've had people actually get worried about this. Like they wouldn't take money out because they were concerned that somehow it would affect the veil of the holding company. That's not the case. The one area that you got to be a little careful of is if your holding company is paying you $1,000 a week, every week, and you're living off that, and you're just constantly doing that. And if somebody ever really put their ears back and went after you, and then you stop paying yourself the day that you got the judgment, they would say, hey, you're withholding the monies for no other reason than to avoid paying me. I don't know if they'd be successful, but they'd make that argument. That's it. So I just tend to be sporadic. If I need it, I take it out. And then you're just lowering the value.
Right.
That's it. Less cash. That's it. It's not going to affect your profit at all. The only time it does affect your profit is when you pay yourself as an employee and you're taking out payroll, in which case it'll lower the taxable amount and it'll make it taxable to you. But if you're just doing a balance sheet item, cash out of the business to the owner, it's literally zero tax implication to. Is it legal to put personal funds directly into our holding company? And how do we document that in our bookkeeping?
I think you go to jail immediately if you do that, right?
Do not pass go.
No, you're totally fine to put personal funds into your holding company. It's kind of the reverse of what we were just talking about. You're able to put your money into your company, but it's your money. So you can take it back later if needed.
Yep, absolutely. It is your money. You can put it in. And it's just like a safe. You're just saying, hey, I put it in the safe and I took it out of the safe. We should be able to tell what's in the safe without opening it up. That's all. What is the proper way to account for expenditures made to improve a warehouse building? Should expenses above a certain amount be capitalized versus expense? Does it depend on the nature of the expense, like HVAC, flooring, lighting, et cetera?
So I'm going to have Jeff jump in here with me. But if it's over $2,500, it needs to be capitalized.
Correct.
Meaning it's an improvement, needs to go on your balance sheet. You don't immediately.
I'm going to complain with you guys.
Okay.
Well, right. we're going also by it says to improve.
Right.
Right. Okay. All right. So you guys are doing the, right. So it always comes down to, am I making the building more valuable or am I fixing a defect? Right.
Correct.
So is it a repair or is it betterment?
So in a repair is really to restore it to its previous use. You had a forklift driver drive through a wall or something like that. That's going to be a repair. Even a it might be an expensive repair.
Yeah. And just so you guys understand, like, I'll use a roof as an example. If I have a hole in the roof and $2,000, a repair, I get to write off. I get to deduct the entire amount. If I improve the roof, let's say I put a new roof on of $10,000 and I'd already depreciated the old roof, then I don't get to write off the $10,000. I spread it out over its useful life, which if it's residential is 27 and a half years.
Well, but Tax Cut and Jobs Act made a change to that.
What did they make it? 15 years?
Made it 15 years along with the HVAC for tax years beginning right after.
I'm using it
one,
as
118.
One's improvement and one is a repair is immediately deductible. The improvement gets fun because even if we have to call it an improvement, it still may be something we can write off. So right, I'll give you three examples. Number one, if you spend $2,500 or less, you can immediately call that a repair and they can't rebut it. If anything that I do that is $2,500 or less, I can immediately call that a repair. Option number two is I do something like an HVAC and it qualifies under section 179 and I can write it off immediately. Option number three is I have an item that's 20 years or less and I choose to accelerate the depreciation by using bonus depreciation under 168 and I write that off up to in 1 year. All of us don't realize that they have that many options.
Well, and the roof is a really good example of the improvement versus repairs because the old rules used to be so ludicrous about how much you're doing to the roof. Are you just tearing tiles off or are you replacing plywood and things of that nature? It was really kind of crazy how they determined whether it was a repair or an improvement.
Yep. And somebody says, are you writing out the materials and the labor? Yep.
Yep.
The answer is yes, you're doing both. Yeah. Somebody's saying, oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff out here. I'm just trying to see what if I'm not going to answer some of these. No, like there's some good questions, but they're all in place. So I'm going to answer the ones that are relevant to this. And then we'll go back and answer them. All right. I am trying very hard to build a stock and stock options to retire. I would love to learn and master the bookkeeping accounting because I'm having a hard time finding the right answers for creating a trade log where I keep track of my buy, sell, crediting, premium received, debiting expenses, everything taken out of the account, for example, and knowing the balance, what's available if I leverage the account. And this is the person who likes to sell naked puts. How are the taxes calculated? You want to jump on this?
I'm going to go into the bookkeeping side first because I kind of feel like your best sources of information is coming from your brokerage accounts.
Yeah, they actually report most of this stuff now, guys.
Right.
Used to be they didn't.
No, they've really forced the brokerage companies to report many things.
They wouldn't even report your basis in an option.
Correct.
Until, what was that, 3 years ago,
They weren't reporting options at all, not that long ago.
Yep.
Right. So we do need to do bookkeeping for your ordinary expenses, but the actual trading side of it should be taken care of with your monthly statements.
Yeah, somebody says we use trade log software. There's a bunch of different ones.
Now, I think where this becomes important that you keep track of this is that you're one of those people decide that you are a trader doing substantial and continuous trading, and you're making that mark-to-market election, your bookkeeping suddenly becomes a lot more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Somebody just said, hey, use mytradingdiary.com. It's about $129. Imports from your trading platform. Here's the deal. If you are trading in stocks and securities, it's going to be passive income. Even if you're doing it short term, it's still passive. In other words, it's not subject to self-employment tax. The problem that we have is that whenever you have an activity that's investment activity, portfolio income, whatever you want to call it, you're not sweating your brow to make it. It's selling securities. And you're not doing it for a third party, then look at that in class an investment activity, and you don't get to write off things like seminars or travel or expenses, ordinary expenses like meals and things like that. You do not get to write it off against it. To make insult to injury worse, you can't write off even management fees for somebody managing your portfolio anymore. They did away with miscellaneous itemized deductions.
And we're talking broker fees, not what you're paying to your management company.
We're talking about everything.
Right.
Yeah. So if you could have somebody that you're paying that's basically getting an override on managing your account of 1% and they're making $100,000, you can't write it off. There's one way to do it, and that is it has to be a guaranteed payment to partner and you have to have a partnership. So generally speaking, we're going to have you set up either as a limited partnership or as a LLC tax as a partnership with a corporation as a member or as a general partner, and you're going to have to pay them a guaranteed payment, or they're going to have enough of an interest to where they're covering the expenses and they have enough income coming to them to reimburse themselves. That's basically it. And I know a lot of you guys say, hey, I'm a trader. The courts are literally littered with people trying to become traders. There is no code provision on it. There's no hard and fast rule. Nobody can cite me one. There are cases with people making $15 million a year that they said it was passive. You have people who did hundreds of trades a year, 500 trades, 600 trades, but they didn't trade all year. They vacationed for 2 or 3 months and they said wasn't regular and continuous enough. As a matter of course, I would say at a minimum round trip is probably 700 trades. And even then, I just wouldn't put myself on it because you're taking Schedule C expenses against Schedule D income. And it's just basically sticking your nose out and making sure that you get harassed by the Internal Revenue Service, as opposed to a partnership has a audit rate of 0.02%, less than that, like it's a fractional percent. Just do that.
And I believe the way the audit technique guide reads for this is the investor or the trader looking to make a profit on the daily changes?
They're literally like, it's a court rule. And then they took the court and put it in a publication.
Because you can be a trader. You can be a legitimate trader, but that does not make all your investments trades. Some of them are still investments.
Yeah, that's fair. So for example, if you are a sole proprietor, and you make $100,000 a year, I know your audit rate's 2.4%, and you're going to lose 94% of the time. On the same token, if you're a partnership and you make $100,000 a year, your audit rate is 0.02%. That's right. You have a 1,200% more likelihood of being audited as that sole proprietor, which is what you'd be as a trader. And your success rate, I mean, it's not even close. It's you're still like, I think they win at about 60%, 60s, but it's not even close. I just don't want you guys getting audited. So I go to where they don't audit and we just don't see audits. If you want to be audited as a partnership, there are ways to make sure you get audited. And those are the guys that make up the 0.02. Or as an S Corp, which also shares the same audit rate at 0.02, just don't pay a salary and pay out lots of distributions. Those are the people. It's like, we just don't see it. Like, Jeff, you see the audits. Do we even have a dozen last year?
No.
We didn't even have a dozen. We had 5,000 returns. So just start doing the math. It's almost never. A
couple more questions on this slide. Using the leverage account as collateral, if you have a margin account, the interest is going to be deductible.
Always against the income that's generated.
Right. And the other thing, how is it going? How are taxes
calculated? You know when it's not deductible? When you lose your butt, and that's the guy that made the 15 mil, and he had the $15 million of transactions, and he had interest, he bought on margin, and he had losses, and they would not allow him to take the losses against his other income.
How are the taxes calculated? Well, if you're trading in nudist puts,
I like that.
They're almost always going to be short-term capital gains.
And it's when the option expires or is liquidated.
Correct. Unless you're investing in something like LEAPS, they're almost always going to be short-term.
So somebody says, what deductions can you get at LLC as a partnership? It's not the partnership that's taking the expense. It's the corporation that's a general partner.
Right.
And what you're doing is you're paying it a guaranteed payment, which comes off the top. So then anything you pick corporation is a guaranteed payment, and the corporation is a management company, and it writes off any expenses that it incurs basically trading that partnership asset. Works like a charm, guys. I've been doing it for 22, 23 years.
I have a question for you, Toby.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this corporation who is the general partner, we're paying them. They're managing the trading partnership.
Mm-hmm.
If they were incurring a management fee or an advisor fee,
could they run it through the corporation?
Could they bill that directly to a corporation?
Absolutely. If I'm going to charge a advisor fee, I'm going to say the corporation is responsible for it. I'd probably do like a 20-80 split and have the about 20% of the income flow into the corporation. You'd have to make sure it has substance behind it. And you'd say, all right, the corporation is going to incur all the expenses. And the partnership is going to pay it X number of dollars, and it's going to be entitled to 20% of the profit. And I would just make sure there's enough there so that the corporation is getting fed enough to cover its expense. If you get more, a guaranteed payment means regardless whether it's profitable or not. So I like to have a larger number. So I would probably say, hey, I'm going to pay the corporation a reasonable amount, maybe $50,000 a year. And I don't think I'll have to worry about covering all the expenses anymore. It comes off the top, so I won't have to pay tax on it. Again, we're trying to do the path of least resistance, something that works. We've won every audit that ever came up on it, although there's very few. But when they do come up, it's pretty easy to attract because you have a statute in a state saying the general partner or the manager is entitled to reasonable compensation. It's hard for the IRS to say, hey, that's not fair, when the statute says you're entitled to reasonable compensation.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
What are the best accounts in the chart of accounts you recommend to set up in QuickBooks to make the end of year tax filing easiest to transfer expenses to an IRS tax firm? I don't really understand what the question is.
I think they just want to know what their chart of accounts should look like. Mm-hmm. We do have some sample chart of accounts on the Platinum portal for all you Platinum members out there. And then the bookkeeping department does also do chart of account setup to kind of customize to your business. It's the most important part of QuickBooks is getting it set up the right way. That's the most important piece to all of this.
Depending on the type of business. So if you're a real estate business, then go to the Platinum portal and look at what a typical chart of account will look like for a real estate business. It's actually pretty small.
Yeah.
The other thing you do is look at tax forms, look what they're asking for, and you'll be able to get some pretty broad categories. And you may have, you know, subcategories like meals. You may have 50% deductible, 100% deductible, but it all goes onto meals. At the end of the day, that's what you're doing, is you're just trying to keep it as simple as possible. You don't say meals with Toby, meals with Jeff, meals with Troy. You have meals.
Now, let me bring up a pet peeve from my past with dealing with clients that are doing their own bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. Clients that this month will put the expense in this account, next month, same expense, and they'll put it somewhere else.
That's because there's too many chart of accounts.
Right. So, yeah, even if you're putting them all in the wrong account to start with your, do you agree with that?
100%. Consistency is key. It's really easy to do a journal entry to move it from one account to another. What you don't want to have to do is go through every single general ledger account to see, you know, oh, this needs to get moved here.
Which is why we recommend that people use spreadsheets.
Right.
I don't want you to mess it up. We're just going to say, here's what we always classify these at. This is what we always classify these at.
Right.
If you have to decide what account it goes into, depending on how many you have, because we have clients that have Christmas trees. They always tell me, look at my chart of accounts. It's three. Like, mm-hmm. Look at this beautiful thing. And I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to put stuff. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you have a lot of categories. I got income from this. I have this one. I have income from this category. I have income from over here. And I'm just like, it's all income. You're killing me. You're killing me, Smalls.
You have more accounts than MGM.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some. Yeah. Hey, I'm currently a wholesaler, which means that you're helping other people find properties, and not sure how to input my income into QuickBooks. I feel like I set it up incorrectly.
Kind of going back to the last question, getting it set up correctly is the most important part of QuickBooks. It kind of takes care of itself once you get it set up the right way. Mm-hmm. We can help with that. Like I said, we do chart of account setup. We can also do reviews, quarterly reviews. We can do a Q&A session after the chart of account setup. So definitely something, use us. We know what we're doing. So. Mm-hmm.
Somebody had a good question. My minor children own their own IRAs, which is possible if you have a custodian. Can I have a self-directed IRA? That's going to depend on the custodian. I believe they have to be over 18. So you may have to help them. After that, can they use that account to open a partnership entity? You don't need to. You would use the trading would be directly in the right worry about the expenses. You'd want to have a separate account. So if they're making me in an IRA, they're not paying tax anyway.
Right.
So there's no reason to even pretend like you're taking expenses. Let's see what else we have. Can a disregarded LLC write off rental car charges incurred while conducting business for that LLC? You guys want to hit that?
Oh, sure. As long as it's for a business use, the rental car, you can absolutely deduct it. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I could think of that might be an issue is this disregarded LLC is like holding a house or something like that. That's not business use.
Yeah, you're going to look at it. So what we say this just about every time we do a tax Tuesday. LLCs are not tax designation. So if it's disregarded, then we care about who the owner with that owner's tax return. So for example, if I have a LLC that's disregarded to a corporation, yeah, the rental car charges are going on the corporation. Mm-hmm. It's just going right onto its books. Like, we literally ignore the LLC. If it's a disregarded entity going up to a holding company, then we have to take a look at what type of business is it. Do we want to write off the rental charges in an LLC that holds real estate, or would it be better to have that in a management entity? I'm going to say the management entity. So while you could do it, I probably wouldn't do it. I'd be reimbursing the LLC saying, hey, I'll take that expense. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I am the manager. I will handle all the expenses, and you're acting on my behalf when you're driving around in a rental car. So yes, you could write it off, but it, obviously, if you guys are not catching on, these things are, it depends quite a bit on how you set it up in that. Somebody says, here's a few good ones. Let's see. Somebody says, I went to the Platinum portal and asked about a guaranteed payment. They sent me a template for a management agreement. Is this the same thing? Yes, because the management agreement has a set amount that they're gonna, that you can just write in. You can make sure you have agreement. There's a few other questions that we'll keep holding. Here we go. How does a business owner reduce the bookkeeper's hourly rate of time in your books and improve on reporting? Troy, before you go over this, I can just tell you from my experience, bookkeepers tend to be able to do about, I would say, 3 transactions an hour or thereabouts. Like, I'm looking at 20 transactions an hour, excuse me, about every 3 minutes you can enter a transaction. Yeah, Jeff is going, what are you typing with one hand? No, it ends in 3 minutes per transaction is about right for somebody. So if you have a lot of transactions, then you have to decide, do I need them all entered individually, or should I summarize them? And instead of my bookkeeper entering in 100 transactions, can I give them the total sales and just have them enter one transaction, knowing that I have the data to back it up in another system? And that is probably the one thing that is the biggest time saver, is realizing when you want your bookkeeper to enter something and whether you want and when you want to just give them a summary. And then I'll let you guys answer it from me.
And I'm going to jump in on this because you make a good point. This pertains not only to bookkeeping, but to tax. The clearer your information is that you're providing, and the more that you summarize it yourself, the less it's going to cost you for your bookkeeping, I'm assuming, and tax returns also.
Yep, that's exactly right, Jeff. As long as we know what the transaction is, if it's summarized, and we have the information, that's kind of a pet peeve of ours, is not getting the information until way later. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us to stay on top of it.
Somebody says, how many transactions per minute does bookkeeper typically take? Again, I think it's about one transaction every 3 minutes. So it's 20 an hour. If you have a HUD, it takes about an hour per HUD. Mm-hmm. Is that about right?
Yep.
So, so you can use some rules of thumb. It doesn't mean that you always just say, hey, I'm not going to have a bookkeeper. It just means that the more summary you can give them, the better. And the more you guys can be on the same page, the better. So if you know what they need and they know what you're doing, then you guys can agree to a methodology to communicate that information over to them. Somebody says, if you have a summary total, that is more difficult to reconcile against the bank statements, as bank statements are itemized. Correct, Frank, but you don't necessarily need to enter into every transaction. You may go through and reconcile, looking at your account or giving somebody a bank statement saying, hey, could you reconcile these transactions? Is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
And that also goes back to what Troy was talking about earlier, that many of these credit cards and bank accounts you can import into mm-hmm. QuickBooks. So they're not entering every transaction in.
Right. Now the bookkeeper is literally just going through the transactions, verifying against the sum. And if you don't have somebody reconciling your books, that's how you get ripped off, by the way, is don't have somebody independent reconcile your books. Just about every time I see somebody who takes a big loss from employee theft, it's because somebody's putting the snow over there, right. Putting the wool over their eyes and leaking it out. And then they don't realize that the account's been drawn down. How does a business owner ensure documentation of receipts?
So like Toby was saying earlier, you want to use a debit card, a credit card, something like that. So it's recorded on the bank statement, credit card statement. That helps out a lot. What a bookkeeper doesn't want is a box of receipts to enter.
Yep.
So the only time we're ever going to ask for a receipt is if you paid cash for it. And who uses cash nowadays, right?
Right.
So if you do want to keep copies of your receipts, not saying you shouldn't, I would do it digitally. I wouldn't keep it all as paper receipts. I'd upload them to a computer, make them PDFs, put it in Dropbox or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And another good reason for doing that is if you've ever noticed some of these receipts fade badly quickly.
Just take a snapshot of it. Most nowadays, they'll have a thing that links to your phone, trade button, some of these others.
Yep.
Or just use the old, I took a picture of it and I told my accountant what it was and it's still sitting in my cloud if I ever need backup, which hopefully you'll never need. Somebody said, hey, using the 280A kit and they're paying themselves for the corporation using their house. And they said, is this a reimbursement? No, Julia, it's not a reimbursement. You're actually being paid for it, but it is non-reported income so long as you don't rent your house more than 14 days a year. So it's actually 14 days or less than 15 if you look at the code. So as long as it's 14 days or less, you just don't have to report it. So if it was to be reported, it would be income, but it's excluded from income just as reimbursements from a company to you are excluded as well. There's exclusions to when you have to show income, and that's one of the good ones. All right. How does a business owner ensure the bookkeeper's understanding of the big picture of the company?
So during our onboarding calls, we should be going through every single entity you have and seeing what that entity does, how it's taxed, and making sure that we understand what's going on, what you're doing with each one of those entities. That should be happening with every onboarding call.
Yeah. And the big picture just means you're spending time. So here's the thing. If you have a larger company, if you're going over 5 million, for example, you need an in-house bookkeeper, unless it's like two transactions. Like, again, it's a combination of not just the income, but the complexity and the number of transactions. If you have a lot of transactions, you probably want to have an in-house bookkeeper and they need to understand your business. Otherwise, you're going to find journal entries. And this is like, I have a pet peeve against journal entries. That's where they put things that they don't know where to put.
Mm-hmm.
And so they make these journal entries and you end up with messes because it's usually 6 months after they started doing the journal entry that they look back and now they're going back in time trying to remember something. If they don't know it, you need to be able to get to it very quickly and make sure that they understand what it is that you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to have a mess. And messes are usually expensive for the business owner.
So even if you do have an in-house bookkeeper, I'd recommend getting them reviewed by a professional, maybe once a quarter.
Absolutely.
Twice a year.
You want to have another set of eyes.
Yep.
So, and by the way, we won't do your books if you get over a certain size. It just doesn't make sense. We're going to ask you to have somebody and then we'll still look at them. And again, the reason you're doing it is, I mean, there's so many, but the big ones are you want to make sure that you don't get too far off base. If you start going off track, it's usually because there's an assumption being made by somebody and hopefully we can cull it and bring it back in. And the other thing is, where a lot of people get ripped off is because somebody who, like, you never let the bean counter have control of the checkbook.
Right.
And what will happen is a bookkeeper, it's really tempting to let them write checks and to have control of the account and they're reconciling everything. And so while they're writing checks to their Uncle Sue or, you know, did I say Uncle Sue, boy named Sue,
yeah.
to Uncle Ned's, you know, pretend company. And then they're documenting it and they're calling it an expense. And the next thing you know, 2 years has gone by and $500,000 is missing. And then you finally realize something's amiss. And it's usually when a check is bouncing. And then and then by the time you go back in, you're like, holy schmoly, I can't even tell what happened. You actually have to go get copies of the checks. And the only reason I say that is I've done that dozens and dozens of times with businesses. I've not run across a business yet where they handed the keys to somebody else. That did not happen. You got to have another set of eyes looking at it and reconciling things.
And I think it's also important that you as the owner, if you do have a bookkeeper, you don't need to know how to use QuickBooks, but you do need to learn how to read those financials. You need to be able to go into your bookkeeper and say, hey, print me out a monthly balance sheet and P&L and just be able to look at them and say, oh, something don't make sense here or we're doing really well. Or
you can usually tell. That's the thing. Yep. Most people can usually tell what they should be expecting. So if I know that my profit should be $100,000 and my bookkeeper walks up and hands me 3 months in $20,000 of losses, I'm looking at them going, what's going on here? It's usually a mischaracterization or misclassification issue. Because you're like, hey, I'm profitable. Why am I looking? And if you're not profitable and you think you should be, something's horribly wrong and you want to make sure that you're taking action. All right. How does the bookkeeper, tax preparer, and CPA work together to help reduce taxes for the business owner?
We don't even talk to each other.
No, I don't. Who are you? In reality, we're working with your bookkeeper and your tax preparer are working together quite a bit. When your books are completed if your tax preparer has any questions, they'll come down to the bookkeeper and we'll go through the books, go through the general ledger, make sure everything's simpatico. Your bookkeeper can do kind of some basic, very basic tax planning. Your tax preparer and CPA will be the more high-end stuff.
Your bookkeeper is giving them the tools of, like, here's the picture. If you don't have good numbers, it's really tough to do tax planning.
Right.
The preparer is usually just preparing what the books say. Like, if I have a good set of books, a corporate return is less than an hour. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to prepare it. And it all comes down to having a good set of books. And that CPA is going to know, hey, here's our options for classification. Do we want to accelerate certain things? Are certain things even eligible for you know, and I kind of mentioned it before. You could have a safe harbor. You could have a 179, or you could have a bonus depreciation, or you could treat it at 5 or 7 years, depending on how it's classified. That CPA should be able to say, here's your options. Option number one, you know, do I want to create a big loss? No, it doesn't do me any good. All right. Option number two is we're getting closer to break even and we're going to have a consistent break even for many years. Maybe I do that. Or maybe I take a huge loss and carry it forward for the next 5 years. And you know, you're able to say, hey, that's going to be this is how that's going to impact my tax situation. I've met people who had met with, you know, they had their accountant, they had a big old fat loss carry forward. They didn't even remember when they had it. And then they run out and they've been using it for so long, they get to the idea that they don't have to pay income tax on any of their income. Like, for example, their stock income, when you had people doing that. And then when all of a sudden they are, sometimes it catches them by surprise. They're used to, hey, I'm making 100 off of this, but I don't have to pay tax on it. You got to be meeting with the accountant to say, hey, what's our projection for next year?
And kind of way this works is you may have a bookkeeper who's doing your books and doing a little planning, but their work is also going to be reviewed by a supervisor.
Correct.
Who may have further suggestions. It's going to go to the tax preparer who will make adjustments or have other ideas or additional ideas, I should say. And they also have a supervisor who's also reviewing that return. So a lot of eyes look at your books from the time you start till the time you get your tax return.
Right.
Somebody just says, hey, are losses only able to be used for 5 years? No, I was just using that as an example. I just gave somebody a heart attack. Yeah, you can carry them forward indefinitely.
Yeah, NOLs.
Yeah, forever. NOLs go on forever. So, yeah, don't worry. I think I just gave, I'm not going to mention it. I think I just gave somebody a heart attack. Does a business owner need to work with their business accounting person on a monthly basis? It depends on their level of complexity and what type of business. But for the most part, if you're an investor, I would say on a quarterly basis, check in.
Right.
Yeah, because your bookkeeper can point out things that you're selling this product for this much, but your cost in your product is this much. So you're not even making the money out of the gate.
Right. At least I'd say you need to look at your financials once a month.
Yep. Look at yours. Get a good idea. But yeah, as far as talking with your accounting person, I say quarterly. Really look at doing tax planning on a quarterly basis. And if you're doing, if it's just not yielding a positive result for you, like it's not making a difference, then you could scale it back. But I would say, like, especially in the first year, you want to know, you don't want to get blindsided with either a tax liability or you don't want to leave losses on the table. Here's a fun one. Somebody says, this is a weird one. This isn't, somebody has asked a question online. I filed my 2015 tax return in 2016. Is it too late to amend? Be 3 years from the date of filing.
That,
so yeah,
it's that dead. Ship has sailed.
Yeah, that ship. I'm sorry. I have a ranching business organized in an LLC as an S corp, and just bought a new truck in the name of the business. I use it primarily for business use. Let me hit that one real quick,
guys. Yes.
First off, if you have personal use of a business vehicle, then the IRS has a public. They give you a scale every year depending on the value of that asset, as to what needs to be included for your income. So if I have a truck that's the business's truck and I'm using it 90% personal, then the IRS publishes the lease value that I include in my income. And that truck, let's say it's a $40,000 truck, then I'm going to go to that and I'm going to include 90% of that as income. It doesn't kill your bail or anything like that. It just means I have to pay, like I'm using somebody else's vehicle. It's like if I go rent a car from Avis, I'm using their vehicle. I'm agreeing to a price. If the business doesn't charge you because you are the, you know, you own the business, it still has to be added. Similarly, we are currently building a garage shop that will be used partially for business storage and partially for personal use. Does paying for the items should have mixed use with your business, or does paying for it with the business jeopardize your corporate bail?
And my feeling is on this that I would rather have the, especially the garage and the truck, owned by one person, one entity, and is renting it out to the people who are using it or the entities that are using it.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.